The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Stop whispering. I don't know what you're saying.
I said we got a busy show today. Welcome in to Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
Right before we go live, he's like,
I'm like, hey,
and I'm like,
we got a lot. We got a lot of news to get to, so let's do it.
Okay.
Hey, welcome in on this Thursday.
That didn't need to be said in private.
No, it didn't. Welcome in. I hope you guys are doing well on this Thursday. We're already wasting time. We've got a lot of news to get to. Netanyahu's starvation plan for Gaza is in full effect, receiving condemnation from the international community. Most of Europe, by the way, the country of Spain just stood up and called it a genocide and that this will not stand. Even Piers Morgan, who's been fully in the tank on this, is now saying that Israel has crossed the line. Trump is distancing himself from all of this. So we're going to dive into that here on the show today.
Well, if we're fair, two countries have consistently called out on behalf of the plight of the Palestinian people. It's Spain and France, surprisingly enough. So credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
Right? We don't always hate them.
No, and we've also got, we're going to talk about the Ukraine failed peace talks. Where was Putin in all of this? Zelensky's feeling butthurt about showing up and finding out that Putin wasn't there. And also, photographers were given explicit instructions on how to photograph Zelensky. Yes, height requirements on how you actually film him while he was there. We're going to talk about that.
Plus, Trump's Middle East trip. It was momentous. What came out of it, what his new foreign policy is. How it's going to really affect Americans. This could have lasting effects on the American economy for generations. We may look back on this as really the new deal, New Deal 2.0, but a good one, not demonic like FDR's. So we're going to get to that as well. Busy show. Clayton's right. So thank you for sticking with us. Tell us where you are in the world, what you came to talk about, what's the story you're most passionate about, whether you read the newsletter, whether you liked it, all of the above. Let us know in the chat.
All right, let's get to the news. So Benjamin Netanyahu's starvation of Gaza plan is in full effect, intentionally blocking international food aid, watching 2 million Palestinians starve to death. That's the goal. This is a war crime by all accounts. Even if you're like fully in the tank for Israel and you don't think Israel could ever do anything wrong, they walk on water, whatever it is, this is a war crime. By any definition, this is a war crime. This is the stuff of demons. And yes, Benjamin Netanyahu is a demon. That's no longer up for debate. Even the Trump administration officials are saying this behind closed doors. Very interesting, isn't it? The once loved Netanyahu is now being pushed aside, cast asunder, as they say. That's why Trump is distancing himself from Netanyahu publicly, rescuing an American hostage, pissing off Netanyahu. Friend of the show, Jewish journalist Max Blumenthal reported Netanyahu wanted hostage Adon Alexander dead. And instead, Trump went behind his back and got him out. Netanyahu wanted Adon Alexander dead and regrets that Trump rescued him via back-channel negotiations with Hamas. Alexander's story should be a cautionary tale for every American Jew considering making aliyah and joining the Israeli occupation army. Overnight, Israel launched a new round of attacks on Gaza, killing 84 people, including little children. The photos are just heartbreaking. We had to blur them out here so, you know, that you can't see them. But, you know, a father here just touching the head of his dead son, his little son, wrapped in a sheet. We've blurred out his face because it's just too horrible, of course, to look at. President Trump in Saudi Arabia said he's working on ending the war in Gaza as soon as possible. Right as soon as he said that, though, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu renewed his promise that the war will not stop. So Trump says we're stopping this thing. And Netanyahu's like, nope, no, you're not. We're going to continue this. And so you see where this is going. President Trump also said we need to get food to the people of Gaza.
When Gaza came up and I said, you know, got to be good to Gaza. Those people are suffering. We got to be good to Gaza. We're going to take care of that. There's a very big need for medicine, food and medicine, and we're taking care of it.
In terms of, like, opening up more access points, or?
Very hard.
pushing the Israelis?
We are.
To open up more access
Very
points?
Very hard. To get food and medicine into Gaza.
How did the Prime Minister respond to that?
Well, felt well about it.
We're pushing them hard.
Who felt well about it?
Yeah, I'm sure he felt well about that because I'm sure some threats were actually made. We're pushing them very hard. Okay, that's all good. That's all fine and good. But Israel is still using American bombs to kill innocent people. Israel used American bombs overnight to attack two different hospital locations in Khan Yunis. Trump could stop this immediately. No more like friendly phone calls with him, pushing him around on this. If you really want to do, you stop the weapons, you stop the money flowing into Israel right now. It's very, very simple. Europe and the United Nations have turned on Israel in a big way. Every EU country on the Security Council demanding Israel lift its food aid blockade that is starving Gaza.
Israel has now fully blocked aid entering Gaza for over 2 months. Blocking aid as a pressure lever is unacceptable. And last week, the Israeli Security Cabinet approved plans to expand its military operations in Gaza.
And the United Nations.
And the West Bank, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And the United Nations, the head of relief aid, Tom Fletcher, really raised a lot of eyebrows yesterday when he said that life-saving assistance is sitting there. It's waiting at the border crossings. And humanitarian aid workers are desperate to deliver that aid, but of course Israel won't let them. And also the real story, of course, who's anybody who's covering this, is that they're being targeted and shot. That's also what's happening. Those aid workers are being targeted and assassinated. Watch.
For more than 10 weeks, nothing has entered Gaza. No food, medicine, water, or tents. Every single one of the 2.1 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip face the risk of famine. One in five face starvation. Despite the fact that you have funded the food that could save them. I can tell you from having visited what's left of Gaza's medical system that death on this scale has a sound and a smell that does not leave you. As one hospital worker described it, children scream as we peel burnt fabric from their skin. And yet we hear that we did all we could. Our response as humanitarians is to make a single ask of the council. Let us work. We have a plan. We have life-saving supplies ready now at the borders. We can save hundreds of thousands of survivors. We have rigorous mechanisms to ensure our aid gets to civilians and not to Hamas.
Yeah.
There's a good question in the chat, and Rumbold says, why doesn't Egypt send all the aid? Because, of course, Gaza does back up to Egypt, and there are entry points through Egypt, but Israel inspects those. Israel totally controls
it.
Israel controls those, too, and the Egyptian government has worked alongside and cooperated with Israel because they don't want a war on their own borders as well. It's a fair question. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't Israel runs like 8 miles into Egypt, doesn't it? Something like into Rafah. I mean, they not mm-hmm. just control the border, but into the border.
Yeah, we've covered extensively here just across the border in Rafah, that massive concentration camp that Egypt built, but Israel controls and has full security control over that entire region. Also, Israel bombed the Rafah border crossing where they were trying to get aid there before. So, yes.
Right. Fair question. Okay. Well, meanwhile, even Israeli journalists are calling some major BS on the Netanyahu regime. Gideon Levy is an Israeli journalist with Haaretz, and he gave this heartbreaking interview this week. And I want to show you clips of this. Watch how he begins when the journalist asks him, what is the plan here? How do Israelis take this? Watch.
I am so desperated that I don't know where to start. On one hand, I have the feeling that there are no real goals. In the beginning of this war, or this attack, shall we call it a brutal attack and not a war? In the beginning, it was very clear that Israel wants to punish Gaza, not only Hamas. You know, the 7th of October was really a traumatic event in Israel, and there was the need to do something and to punish and to take revenge. But 19 months later, when you see that it continues, and it continues in a terrible intensity, only the last day there were almost 100 people killed, almost all of them innocent people, 22 children, just in the last day when we are talking now. You realize that genocide is the word. Now, it's not that Israel is planning a genocide, no, even not the government. But it's very clear that there's nothing cheaper than the life of the people in Gaza. And they are serving as toys in a game, mainly domestic politics game, in which Netanyahu and his government want to continue it.
It's Netanyahu and his government that wants this. Clearly, there's no other explanation. Now, here he talks about how the rest of the world sees this in batches, and we get it in news headlines. 20 children killed, 15 in a school, 15 medics here, a few in apartment building here. He says for him, it isn't these numbers. It's real people like this. Watch.
There are the statistics which are horrifying, the UN statistics. Every day you get new figures, but it's not only about the figures. I mean, it's very clear that starvation, every fifth person in Gaza is starving. Over 90% of the people of Gaza, if not 100%, don't get enough food. But I always think about individuals. I have a friend in Gaza with whom I used to work in Gaza for many, many years. He's 63 after a stroke, and he's diabetic, and he needs insulin. And 1 week ago, he told me he was left with the last 2 drops of insulin. I didn't call him ever since then, but we know what happens to people in his condition when they don't have insulin. He is not an exception. He is Gaza.
He is Gaza.
Can you imagine sitting there and you're like, I can't call him back because I can't know what's going to happen to him because I know the inevitability. So we sit by while people go into diabetic comas. And that's what we are doing collectively. Now, he says two more things that I really want you to hear, because I think this is the only thing that people in our helpless situation can take away from this. Number one, how do Israelis live like this with so much death happening in front of them every single day? How do they live? He says, we have a constant cloud. I mean, you have to think about it, like the energy of death is constantly in the air. And then he talks about who is the only person who can stop it. So first, how do Israelis cope with this?
What Israelis tell themselves is that the world is anti-Semitic, that they are all against us, no matter what we do, that they all hate us, no matter what we do. And by this, that's the best protection shield, because then you are not accountable for anything. It's about the world who is anti-Semitic. And therefore, people are less troubled by it.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a good, it's a good robe to wrap yourself in.
Right. We have to do it because they want our extinction. So it gives us license because everybody hates them, right? They're sold this idea. And yet when Israelis go abroad, you know, they are usually welcomed diplomatically. And so, you know, it's an indoctrination. If you can read many books of Israeli Jews who've been told about who write about the education they get from the get-go, from the start. So he talks about, the anchor says, well, what about, you know, all the boycotts of Israel or the Israeli economy, because Israel can suffer from this because the international world is condemning them. So will the fallout of the Israeli economy do anything? And he says, well, really, there isn't a fallout. We're all pretty much fine. Our economy's good. Life here is pretty good other than this dark cloud. Listen to who he thinks is the only person who can stop it.
The only one who can stop Israel right now is Donald Trump. And I have a feeling that he's not going to do it, but I'm not sure. I still have some hope.
Okay. Is there any other way to see it? Your university boycott is not going to do anything. You know, obviously the leaders of Europe, to be fair, Macron has been saying this for over a year, that the people of Gaza are suffering. It's easy to ignore Macron. It's easy to ignore Spain, right? It's the only person it's not easy to ignore is Donald Trump. He really is the only one who handles the cards. But maybe, just maybe, Trump is starting with a bigger priority right now, which is preventing Israel from starting a nuclear World War III.
Right, and moving towards a peace plan with Iran and a nuclear deal, which is sending shockwaves through the world right now, that, you know, Iran may walk away from their nuclear ambitions if the United States lifts sanctions. We'll talk more about that. But that's exactly what Alex Jones said the other day when he addressed neocons like Mark Levin, who actively wants a war with Iran, wants Iran wiped off the face of the map. He wants the United States to put Israel first, do Israel's bidding against Iran. He, Ben Shapiro, and others. But specifically, this is my favorite clip of the week. I've watched this multiple times now.
Let's warn you, there's a F-bomb here, but this one's worth it. This is the energy we feel. I just wanted to give that out. We didn't bleep it, did we?
I don't know.
I didn't bleep it, so okay. Nope. I just wanted to give that warning for our audience. Okay, go ahead.
So I don't want to hear it. I speak for the Christians and Jews of America, as I played last hour. I'm Mark Levin, and we don't stand with Al-Qaeda. Well, the hell you don't. Your boss, Netanyahu, literally runs it. He's the last standing neocon with any power. So I don't want to hear it. Stop talking to me like I'm culturally and historically and military illiterate. I'm not, Mark. And Trump is actually pro-Israel, and he understands that Iran is going to blow it off the map, and then Israel's going to blow them off the map, and then Pakistan and India are going to have a nuclear war, and all the war games, we're all dead, you dumb son of a bitch. What the fuck's your problem? You fucking megalomaniac fuckheads. And that's what Trump's told Netanyahu, a little nicer than that, but not much more, I was told. I mean, we're rational, sane men.
It's yes. Too good.
Oh, my God. I've watched it so many times.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Mark Levin. Oh, my God. These warmongers.
What the F's your problem?
These neocons.
Oh. We want to not die and not other people to die.
And we don't want to do Netanyahu, the demon, the Satan that is Netanyahu. We don't want to do his bidding. Stop pretending that he's a nice guy. He's evil. And the people that have worked with him, who I've spoken to, will tell you how corrupt and evil that man is. We're not doing his bidding anymore. And I hope that that message is getting through to Netanyahu, hopefully. Anyway, we're going to talk more about that.
Well, did you pick up when he says
a little bit here, come up on the show,
that this is what Trump told Netanyahu in maybe a little bit nicer, but not much.
Yeah.
So he's reporting that Trump blew like this to Netanyahu in order to prevent World War III. So, okay, you know, I hope that's true. I don't have any way to know if it is or not.
All right, we've got more news to get to. We're going to get to that Iran story a little bit later in the show. And Daniel McAdams from the Ron Paul Institute is standing by. We're going to be talking about that Mideast trip here in just moments. But first, I want to talk about Vancouver. Something deeply disturbing is happening in Canadian classrooms, specifically in Vancouver area schools. But every Canadian needs to see this to believe it. This isn't about reading or math. It's about teaching kids how to think. It's not even about teaching kids how to think critically or even how to behave properly in a classroom respectfully. No, this is a coordinated campaign funded and sanctioned by public school boards to push a radical gender ideology directly into the minds of five-year-olds, kindergartners. Look at this. We've obtained exclusive images from a new Westminster kindergarten classroom. Take a look at this. These are from the Kakite Elementary School. At first glance, it might look like a normal classroom. Tiny chairs, colorful floors, kids in sneakers. But look closer and you'll see something shocking. Stickers of the Progress Pride flag, now updated to include trans stripes and intersex symbols stuck to the back of each chair in the classroom. I mean, I would flip the hell out. I'd have an Alex Jones moment like that if I walked into a classroom and saw my kid sitting in a chair like this with someone's disgusting politics stuck to the back of the chair. Wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, it's not just politics. It's promoting sexual diversions, like or deviance.
Perversions,
yeah. How is a child supposed to have any hope of understanding who they are and what healthy relationships are and what, you know, a respect for their own body is when they're being told this agenda that says, have sex with whoever, whenever, whatever it feels like all the time, and you'll explore yourself, and that's empowerment. And then that leads to a life of depression and disease. Way to go, kindergarten.
Yeah, way to go. These aren't just decorations. They're political symbols pushing an ideological agenda, like Natalie talked about, that celebrates sexual deviance. I mean, that's exactly what this is. Mommy, why is there a trans pride flag on my chair in my school? Mommy, am I trans? I'm kind of told that, you know, I should be okay with, like, you know, going and getting, like, part of my genitalia chopped off.
Well, obviously, if you're celebrating this, then maybe I want to be it, right? Quite obviously, if this is something the school district is promoting, seemed obvious.
Yeah. So why the hell would a kindergartner classroom need these flags? Are five-year-olds demanding political representation? Are toddlers lobbying for gender identity inclusion? Of course not. This is not about what the children want at all. This is about what the activists want. Full stop. That's it. And it's not just some rogue teacher, by the way. This is coming from the top. Redacted has received the internal emails. Yes, the actual emails sent out to teachers and staff in School District 40, which includes Vancouver's New Westminster. Here's the email. Take a look at your screen. It outlines Direct Pride Logo Initiative. And now the school district is mandating the placement of pride flags in every school facility across the Vancouver School District. Not just outside the school, inside where the children are. Again, this is coming from the top. The district pride logo will soon be displayed at the main entrance of all of our learning and working sites, welcoming students, staff, and visitors when they walk into the school. In their own words, this is an effort is intended to increase the visibility of the district's support for our 2SLGBTQ+ community. When did this all get added in there? 2SL? When is that? The email praises the redesign of the school's district logo using the Progress Pride colors crafted by a former student, of course, and then brags about how this symbol of ideological conformity will greet every student and visitor at the door when they walk in.
Oh, yours will be shipped soon. Put it at the front of the door. Entrance to the school.
Like as if it's a rainbow-themed government logo somehow makes a child feel safer. And then it doesn't stop there. Go ahead.
Well, I just can say, and the thing is, like, the kids that don't buy into that ideology, they're the ones that will be punished. Like, you have to, like, you have to be welcoming to everyone but them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then look at this on the district's website. You'll find a full rundown of what's planned for Pride Month in the schools, including events for the youngest students. This is happening during school hours with taxpayer dollars. And without any debate, it's not optional. It's not up for discussion. Parents are simply expected to comply. Let me be clear. No one is suggesting that any child should be bullied or excluded. Every child deserves respect. But this isn't about kindness. This is about ideology. This is about the state-backed political indoctrination of children. And it's being carried out at the most impressionable members of our society. Children, kindergartners, five-year-olds, for crying out loud. It's no wonder that sex change operations right now are surging in Western countries. Hell, today, news out of the UK this morning. In the Daily Mail, soaring numbers of children are waiting for specialist gender care on the NHS, with 157 of them under the age of 10. So business is booming for UK's gender care specialists. According to a report, a number of British children are reportedly awaiting gender care appointments as specialists, toddler-age kids awaiting to have their genitalia basically cut off. Over 100 kids under 10 awaiting this treatment. I'm furious about it. This isn't education.
Well, no, because if you were going to educate people about what it really means to be homosexual, you might tell them the truth about the things, or a lesbian, or bisexual, or sexually promiscuous. You would tell them the real risks, such as the risks that come with abortion, such as the risks that come with gay sex. There's a lot of risk, actually, for anal sex that we are not told. You would tell the risk of being a lesbian. Do you know that lesbians have the highest rate of STDs? Why does that make sense? They don't sleep with men because it turns out they do. All of this, I refer you to Miriam Grossman's excellent book called You're Teaching My Children What? For all of the real data around sex that they don't teach. So they don't teach that for a reason. That omission shows that it's plainly political in order to promote healthy sexuality as promiscuity and experimentation. And obviously, that leads to depression.
Well said. Excellent. Well said. And if you question it, you're the problem, right?
Yeah.
You question it, you're the problem. You're the bigot. You're the one who needs re-education.
Right.
You're the problem. So I hope people in Vancouver stand up, demand school district reverse the sick policy. We've put messages into the school district. I want to know who signed off on this. Did the parents? So when little children walk in, they've got these trans flags and all of this political propaganda slapped on their children as soon as they walk into the school. Are the parents okay with this? Who signed off on this? People in Vancouver, and, you know, of course, this is going to be spreading into massive amounts of other places as well. You guys need to stop it. Stand up and fight for this.
All right. I want to tell you about Ursula von der Leyen. She's the European Commissioner and Death Eater. She got a slap on the hand for her backdoor vaccine deals. It's called Pfizergate. When she hid text messages she had sent to Albert Bourla, the head of Pfizer, to get vaccines paid for by the European Union and into the European Union. Now, this is again happening to her because when this chick gets investigated, her phones always seem to be blank and wiped. How does that happen? Now, it's no secret. I'm not a fan of hers. She's an authoritarian demon, and it's super frustrating to watch her continue to fail up and never face consequences. I remind you, she lost every election she ever ran in Germany, but her party won. That's why she was installed into the Bundestag. And when she was Germany's defense minister, she was investigated for military contracts. When officials tried to search her phone, it'd been wiped. Again, no, I don't know. I don't have that context. I don't know how these military but let me assure you, the military contracts were on the up and up. You can't see it. Phone's blank. Sorry. This all fell under the radar because it happened in early 2020 and then the pandemic. So she never was punished. Now comes this court case from the European Commission where, again, this is the big case because she's hiding things on her phone. In 2021, the New York Times reported on how she was sending personal text messages on her phone with Albert Bourla, and we never got to know how the European Union paid for or got those Pfizer vaccines. The New York Times requested these texts, and she said, don't have them. We don't have them. She didn't say why. She didn't say what happened. She just said, don't have it. F off. The court said, yeah, you do. We have proof that you do. You must hand them over. And they went to another European court. That European court says, yeah, you guys are being super shady. You didn't give a reason for why they were deleted. You didn't tell us how you had looked. You didn't have any justifiable reason for this non-possession. In other words, you're being shady and that doesn't apply. But this is the European Commission. They don't have to do shit that they don't want to. So they're saying, yeah, okay, sorry. The court said, gave us a hand slap. We're sorry we did that. They're saying, this is when you know a government is. We should have been more transparent. That's what governments always say when they screw their own people. So they have not, though, committed to handing over the text messages. Even though the court says they have to, they're still saying, we're not going to be bothered to go look. So how can you do this? How can a court say you got to do this? And they're like, sorry, we didn't do it. I'm going to try. I mean, imagine your kid. You're like, Ava, clean your room. Sorry, I didn't clean my room. No, it doesn't end there. I'm the authority and you got to do what I say. So again, this is one slippery bitch. And I would like to see some punishment. So let me know what you think of that. What?
You want to talk about slippery bitches?
Okay.
Let's talk about Jake Tapper real quick here. Okay. Jake Tapper is on a book tour right now for his scam of a book about the cover up of Biden's mental decline. Even though he was complicit in that cover up, he's been doing interviews, but only, of course, on his own network. They've been like parading him around his own network on CNN. So clearly no one will actually see any interviews there because no one watches that network. So, the questions are going to be really tough, right? Can you imagine? Like you see Jake down the hall, you're going to ask him tough questions. Actually, not so fast. Here's CNN's John Berman actually asking Jake Tapper a tough question like, hey, weren't you to blame for this cover up? Watch.
Think of conservatives now criticizing you and the media in general for how President Biden was covered during his administration.
I think some of the criticism is fair, to be honest, of me. Certainly, I'm not going to speak for anybody else. But knowing then what I know now, I look back at my coverage during the Biden years, and I did cover some of these issues, but not enough. I look back on it with humility. Look, what we learned through our reporting is that starting in around 2019, 2020, there were two Bidens. There was a Biden that was perfectly workable, serviceable, seemed fine, and then there was a non-functioning one that couldn't come up with names of top aides, that would lose his train of thought to an alarming degree. And that non-functioning Biden reared his head increasingly over and over. It really seemed to exacerbate and get much worse in 2023, 2024.
Oh, okay. I purposefully hid the story, underreported the story, but go ahead and buy my book. So I, like, that's really what he's saying here. Like, I lied. I hid this. I have a lot of humility about it now. I've been really thinking about it.
Fair.
Now.
It's fair. But buy the book. What were you going to say, Philip?
Well, I know people like misspeak sometimes, but I don't know if what he was trying to say, but he said, knowing then what I know now. And I do believe that's how it was, that he did know then what he knows now.
Exactly.
Like, sure. So
my kids knew it, like, from Freudian footage. So,
yeah. All right. Well, we got a lot more news to get to here on your Thursday. We're going to look at President Trump's Middle East trip. Daniel McAdams from the Ron Paul Institute is going to be joining us here in moments. And we're also going to talk about Ukraine's failed peace talks. Are they failed? Where was President Putin in all of this? Did Zelensky come in with too high of demands and too high of heels to get what he wanted? We'll talk about that. But first, so here's the deal. I cannot go online without using ExpressVPN. I do a lot of traveling. We cover a lot of really difficult stories here on the show. And there's absolutely no way that I'm trusting my private data and our sources that we speak with journalists around the world just on an open Wi-Fi network. So what is a VPN? That's exactly what ExpressVPN does. A VPN is simply a virtual private network. It's a tunnel between your device and the internet. It's designed to keep your online activity private and secure. So maybe you're not doing like the kind of crazy journalism that we're doing here on this show or speaking with journalists who are in very dangerous war zones around the world. Maybe you're just doing your online banking and you're at an open Wi-Fi network at a hotel or a coffee shop or something like that, an unsecured Wi-Fi network. Well, that's where you have to use a VPN to protect yourself, to make sure that people aren't snooping on your private data. It's on all of our devices because it allows us to basically hide exactly what our traffic is doing, and we're able to spoof our location just like we're in the United States or another country. I mean, for crying out loud, when I'm in Europe, there are certain websites you're just not able to access because the European Union will block access to real news sites. So guess what? You need to, you know, spoof your location like you would in the United States. Not only does ExpressVPN keep your data secure, but it also unlocks the full internet. I even use it to watch different news broadcasts that are blocked in certain countries. It's absolutely crazy that we live in this era of censorship. But ExpressVPN is a total game changer. Find out right now how you can get 4 months for free by scanning the QR code that's right here on your screen or clicking the link in the description box below this video, or simply go to expressvpn.com/redacted. Again, that's expressvpn.com/redacted. So President Trump's Mideast trip is in many ways a game changer, from his anti-interventionist speech the other day in Saudi Arabia to shaking hands with an ISIS leader who's now running Syria. You know, hey, forget about all those murders, the killing of Christians and all of that. Just, you're a handsome man and let the that's all in the past now, I guess. To this, which Clandestine posted this earlier and I thought it was fascinating. He says, hear me out. What if Trump just negotiated a new deal with Iran without Netanyahu? Trump visited the Red Arrows near Iran's border in Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and UAE. Now we get news that Iran are willing to give up their nuclear weapons. I find it hard to believe this is all merely coincidence. To me, it looks like Trump's trip to the Middle East might not actually be about signing economic deals with Saudi Arabia and Qatar. I think more is going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. The real meetings are going on behind closed doors. Trump is up to something. And I tend to agree. Something big seems to be brewing here. Dan McAdams is here. He's the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute. Dan, good to see you as always. Just at a high level, what do you make of this trip? Do you think it's been a success so far? And do you think something big is brewing behind the scenes that us little people are not privy to?
Well, I have to admit, you know, in the run-up to the trip, I would say, the, you know, 4 or 5 days before the trip, we started hearing all these things about how, you know, Trump and Netanyahu are on the outs. He's PO'd at Netanyahu. You know, Waltz was fooling around behind his back with Netanyahu. And I kind of thought it was sort of PR spin to ease Trump's way into these Gulf Arab states. I thought it was just kind of, you know, PR flag stuff. But, I mean, honestly, at the end of the trip, it looks like it was actually true because you saw a very successful visit. As you referenced earlier, you saw an amazing anti-neocon speech. I wish someone would tell him that he has a bunch of neocons working for him. But the speech, nevertheless, was fantastic. And I hope this is, I mean, this could be, if he absolutely follows what he talked about there, this could be one of the most important and consequential speeches in foreign policy and presidential history, I think.
Now, I want to ask you about the libertarian take on meeting with former ISIS terrorists, because every time the media screams their head off about, like, oh my God, he's meeting with Putin, Putin's a war criminal, he's KGB, he's bad, I'm like, I don't have a problem with it. I really want diplomacy with Russia. But then I see this meeting with former ISIS leader Ahmad al-Sharaa, who was Jilani, who's now running Syria. And I think we have to have diplomacy in Syria. I can't have a double standard here. So how do we take this? Because if it does lift sanctions for Syrians and they can get medicine easier, they can have prosperity easier, doesn't necessarily make Christians safer. But is that my problem? Right. And so can you help me with that internal contradiction?
I think the phrase screams their head off is probably the wrong term to use when you're talking about ISIS, because
right.
They're good at taking people's heads off. But I actually thought that was a real downside of Trump's trip. I think it was, I mean, I don't know who told him to do it. I think it was disgraceful to meet with him. He's still on our most wanted terrorist list. And I can tell you that veterans of the Iraq War are seething, because not only is he a terrorist and a murderer, he murdered and tortured American citizens, American service members in Iraq. You know, he was a courier for ISIS, and then he started up his own franchise of Al-Qaeda in Syria, where he's responsible for implementing Sharia law in the Idlib province, which was absolutely devastating to women. And to this day, Alawites, Christians, Druze are being slaughtered. There was a huge slaughter a couple of weeks ago. He's the president, and he's the one who declared it. And we're also seeing lots of women, I'm talking about teenage girls, Alawite girls, who are being kidnapped and forced into becoming the wives of some of these deranged killers who are on Jilani's team. So, yes, you have to recognize the reality, I suppose, in Syria. But this, I think, is more of a nod to Israel than it is about Syria, because one of the conditions is that Jilani will have to bring Syria into the Abraham Accords and all of this other business. So I think there's an ulterior motive there. But nevertheless, not really a bright spot for American foreign policy, in my opinion.
One of the other, though, so that's not, I agree with you, and that's why I said at the beginning, I think that was the blight on this trip, if there was a blight at all. But now we're learning about this Iran connection here, and this might be another bright spot, not a blight spot, but a bright spot here, that without Netanyahu's involvement, may actually be negotiating a nuclear deal where Iran would give up enriching uranium at the highest levels for nuclear weapons in return for removing of sanctions, and we would have some sort of a normalization process here. That would be a game changer in my mind, and it would be shocking that Netanyahu and Israel is not involved in this process at all. What do you make of that piece of this trip?
No, that's absolutely important. And in fact, just before we came on, it came out that Rubio had a call with Netanyahu today. And the readout is, for the first time, this administration has expressed its concerns over the treatment of Palestinians in Gaza. So that is and I'm sure it killed Rubio to say it, but this is a huge development. And I think it's a further distancing of this administration. Look, I think this deal is very close. I think one of the benefits of him talking to Gulf leaders, especially now for the rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran, is that he's able to hear the other side of things. Now, no one is going to accuse the Saudis of being, you know, overly ambitious in protecting the Palestinians. Nevertheless, he's hearing that side of it. And I think that's why we saw movement at the tail end of this trip, where we saw an indication from the Iranian side, one of the top advisors, kind of teased out this idea that we would, you know, we would, it's just, we would end high enrichment, we would forswear nuclear weapons forever in exchange for this. And Trump actually reposted it on his social media, which would certainly indicate that that's something that he's interested. Now, the downside to all this, guys, is the fact that they are seething, the Republicans are seething in the House and in the Senate. 200 Republicans in the House and the Senate, and that would be every U.S. Republican senator except, thank goodness for Rand Paul, signed a letter saying you better not allow them to enrich any uranium, zero, none, or we won't pass it through the Senate, and you're going to get a junky deal like Obama had where the next president can overrule it. I think it's an absolutely despicable thing for Republicans in the legislative branch to do to their president, and it could really be a monkey wrench in the works.
Right. That's a great point.
Okay, so we need to put some pressure on our elected representatives if we can. Let's talk a little bit about the economics, because billions of dollars in deals, in trade deals done with these wealthy nations. And, you know, I think that I've started to see the liberal media putting this out as if, I saw a headline on Drudge, it said Saudi first instead of America first. Like, look what he's doing. He's legitimizing these countries. He is putting their interest first. But this really could be a form of the intentions of the New Deal, where we are shifting away American employment from government jobs to real jobs based on international trade. So what is, can you give me the a pie in the sky idea of what this could be? And then what are the caveats to look out for?
I mean, well, Matt Drudge should explain that to a Boeing worker who's going to be assembling some of these planes that Cotter bought, a lot of planes, and to the other workers are going to be building some of these things. You know, I think there's nothing wrong with the president being an emissary. I mean, he shouldn't be an agent of private government, but of being an emissary and bringing people along and signing deals, I don't see any problem with that. It's certainly better than what he criticized, which was going around the world lecturing people on how they should live. But the other side of this whole thing, and there was a fascinating article in Politico today, where the Israelis are very upset because they're recognizing the massive contrast between the relationship between the U.S. and Israel, which is a net drain on our economy, on our political resources. And now what this trip has shown, which is that developing a relationship with the Arab Gulf countries can actually be a massive boom for the American economy. And I think that will further accelerate this sort of drift, I hope it will, in my opinion, accelerate this drift away from our dependent relationship with Israel, which is a negative relationship, and toward more positive relationships with countries who want to do business with us.
Yeah, when I hear people like Mark Levin say that, you know, America's closest ally, Israel, no. That's not true at all. And we've benefited in no way by this relationship at all. In fact, it's hurt the United States of America tremendously. Daniel McAdams, always great to see you. Thank you for jumping in here before the weekend. Hope you have a great weekend. Dan is from the Ron Paul Institute, executive director over there. Always great insights. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks so much.
I love Dan because he's not a sycophant either. He's
right.
Clear-headed about all of it. So that's always great.
Yeah. I mean, this is pushing us all, right? And so for those of us who want to just hate Trump, well, you have some fodder, you know, from this trip, the plane, the ISIS connection, all of that. But then you have to also acknowledge the good parts, the economic deals, the peace negotiations, all of that. So, you know, we have to be wide-eyed for all of it and not based on our own pre-existing notions. One of the resources we use when we're trying to figure out what the bias is on any given news is Ground News, and they are a sponsor of Redacted, and we'd love to tell you about it. It's a way where you can go to ground.news, you can see what's trending, what are the major stories, or you can look up a story on your own and figure out what is the political bent of the different places that is covering it. So they will give you links to the outlets you just saw, like BBC, CNN, you know, all over the place, and they will label it for you whether or not there's a bias there and how there is a bias, because a lot of times I think the most of us can see these stories. We know that something's been omitted, but we're not exactly sure what or how. And you, if you just oppose that with the other bent, then you can get the most complete story. So for instance, this trip to the Middle East for Trump, there's going to be so many different takes on it in the coming weeks and months. We need to know how to see it, and we need a balanced perspective. So if you head on over to ground.news/redacted, you'll get 40% off unlimited access. And again, you get all the world's news in one place, plus they keep it real with you to let you know how to see things. So it's like walking a full circle around any given story to see, what am I missing? What don't I know, right? You can't rely on any one news site. So again, we use it all the time. If we think like, well, that's obviously bad. What am I missing? That's a great place to go. So again, ground.news/redacted and get 40% off. All right. Well, poor Ukrainian President Zelensky, he planned a trip to Istanbul and invited both Russian President Putin and U.S. President Trump, certain that that would bring back the cameras, but neither of those gentlemen showed. So he was left to go to Turkey and negotiate with a Russian delegation, not these powerful leaders. He did get to meet with Turkish President Erdogan, and there was some press, but not the kind of A-listers that he enjoyed in 2022 when he was the world's media darling. One thing, though, that Zelensky's staff is really good at is that every time he meets with a world leader, we get like that, a sizzle reel that is usually full of like emotional music and flattering, you know, images of Zelensky and him being brave and, you know, as if he is constantly, you know, executing on the Nuremberg trials right in front of our very eyes. This trip was no different. We got this video. I'm not going to play the whole thing. And, you know, again, highly edited close up of these soldiers. They're waiting for Zelensky. Here he comes with his pretty wife. He's wearing this. It's not a sweatshirt and fatigues. It's suit like, I suppose. Usually these are covered with very dramatic war drama music. At least they've stopped doing that. So that's what we got. But no deal as of yet. Now, tomorrow is when the U.S. delegation flies in. They were kind of letting them, you know, like when your kids are fighting, let them work it out on themselves. And then does mommy have to get involved? That was very much the U.S. method here. They say, we'll come on Friday. While the negotiations were taking place, there was an earthquake in Turkey, but we have no word if that means actually, if that was ominous to an agreement. Zelensky did complain about this on X. He talked all kinds of nonsense, such as it's so cute that he thinks he's getting Crimea back. He also says that President Erdogan supports that, and it's very personal to him to get Crimea back, as if we all still care about his feelings. Now, he goes on and on. You can read this thread if you want to. But he does say that a ceasefire is the priority, which he has always said that a ceasefire is Russian propaganda, is what Russia wants. We can't have a ceasefire. This language has very much changed in the last few weeks. Joining us to discuss is Colonel Rob Maness. He's a 32-year-old USAF combat vet and the host of the Rob Maness Show. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Hi, it's good to be back.
So what do you make of this peace agreement? What do you think that, I mean, is it just another, Zelensky likes to just have these camera parties and nothing comes of it? Or is there something to tell us that this might be serious this time?
Well, the real work that's happening is the low-level talks, both sides. The United States team is also there. The Turks are playing the moderation game and the host of these talks, just like they did, we talked about before, in the original Istanbul agreement. Before you get to Putin, Trump, and Zelensky coming together, you have to have these level of talks. So I'm not surprised at all that Vladimir Putin didn't show up. He sees himself as an equal to President Trump. I think Mr. Zelensky has a, I don't know, maybe it's a short guy syndrome. I don't know what's wrong with him. But they always try to, when he does show up at these things, take jabs and those kind of things. They did the typical, well, I'm here, where's Vladimir, and those kind of things. But their teams are meeting, and that's what the goal of this particular meeting was about, was to get Russia and Ukrainians' teams to talk to each other, and that's happening.
Yeah. The word Napoleonic comes to mind, except Napoleon had strategy, and Zelensky doesn't seem to.
He was a much better general.
Yeah. Go ahead, Clayton.
You know, it's interesting. So at the heart of all of this, of course, is what's going to happen. And it seems like we keep hearing progress that, oh, Zelensky's willing to cede territory here, willing to give. First of all, he has no cards. I mean, I guess at the heart of it, and you're the expert on this, but he's not dictating the terms of this. And the Russians are dictating the terms of this. President Putin is dictating the terms of this. They control this territory. They have wiped the floor with them, by all accounts. He's gone up against NATO and essentially beat NATO at the heart of all of this. Zelensky has nothing to put, no cards. He has no cards, as President Trump told him. You have no cards. We're holding all the cards. You have no cards. So he's still making these demands about territory. We're not going to recognize what is now under Russian control, Donbass, Luhansk, Donetsk, those parts of which was once Ukraine. Now they're part of the Russian Federation. Crimea, for instance, he's still holding on to that. They're not going to get anywhere if they keep holding on to that, will they, Colonel?
No, they won't. And you hit all the right points. Putin holds all the cards. The United States holds some cards. But look, we were part of that NATO effort that the Russian army has defeated along with its allies. So, you know, the cards are in Putin's hand. I think the public stuff that you see Mr. Zelensky putting out there is to try to set the table as much as he can for his country from some sort of power perspective, because they have to be seen as equals when they sign this agreement with the Russians in the eyes of Europe, especially. And that's what I think is going on here. It's purely a media effort and information and influence operation intended to set some type of power position for the Ukrainian leader when he does come to the table with Vladimir Putin and the president of the United States. But as President Trump said on Air Force One today, he said, nothing real is going to happen until I meet directly with Vladimir Putin. So all of these stories and hand-wringing and those kind of things, it's a little bit premature. Again, I go back to the good news is the two teams are talking, and apparently they're talking at the right levels. The individual over the Russian team is the same gentleman that, and he's a close aide to President Putin. He's the same gentleman that led the team in the original Istanbul agreements that eventually Mr. Putin and Mr. Zelensky both signed up to. Until right. Boris Johnson meddled for NATO.
But then that makes all of this Zelensky trip theater, and it's pathetic, and it's costing us a lot of money to talk about it and the press to go there and all of the security diplomatic efforts. And it just shows what a ruse this little shit is. Now, one of the things that bothers me so much is that in 2022, he signed this law forbidding peace negotiations with Russia. And now he says, well, that doesn't apply to me, which again says to us, don't take anything that this guy does serious, right? But are we foolish to even be talking about it still?
Yeah, it's an attempt to set a power position, but it's going to fail. And it is failing based on what you just said. There's a lot of time wasted and those kind of things. That's why I'm trying to focus on the middle management level of the teams coming together and talking and having the American team there. That's a middle management type team helping the Ukrainians understand what their position really is and talking to the Russians at the same time. So I have a moderate level of positive feelings about this just because the two sides were brought to the table at the same time and are talking to each other. Zelensky is doing nothing but fucking around with it, and he could hurt it. He could hurt it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, as he has in the past multiple times. Or maybe Boris Johnson swoops in again with a parachute and tries to torpedo this whole thing. I'll get you out of here on this, Colonel. I don't think we have this image here. I added it to the show late, but this was being handed out to reporters who are covering the Zelensky appearance there. And the press pool, the press service was handing this out to reporters on how to photograph Zelensky. I'm not even making this up. This is astonishing. I'll post it on X. Requirements for photographing events involving Vladimir Zelensky. Permissible angles. The primary shooting angle should be at eye level or slightly above waist up or higher. Prohibited angles, shooting from a low angle, which would emphasize his short stature. Wide angle distortions, making the body proportions appear unnatural. I mean, this is what this is how they've played this guy. Would you think they would hand out similar papers if Putin showed up? No, they would
absolutely not.
You know, this is like Vogue cover instructions for reporters on how to photograph Zelensky.
What is his good side?
Yeah, I mean, it just shows the unserious nature of some of the pieces of the Ukrainian government. And you would think that they would be very seriously focused on this opportunity that Donald Trump and his administration and even the Russian administration has presented to them as an opportunity to end all this killing of thousands and thousands of young Ukrainians and Russians. And believe me, those deaths are hurting Ukraine's future more than any other entity in this conflict.
That's a great point. And a way to bring it back home, because when you see the massive, massive amounts of gravestones all across Ukraine, an entire generation, multiple generations in many ways, totally wiped away in Ukraine now. Moms begging for answers about their, children who've gone missing. They can't even get part of their pensions paid out because they're being labeled as missing when we know that they're actually killed and thrown in these mass graves. Just disgusting. Colonel Maness, great to see you. Thank you for that perspective. As always, thank you so much.
Thank you all.
All right. I didn't see this document before we came to air because Clayton added it late, but it is Shockies. It's so narcissistic. It's beyond.
No, my favorite is at the end of it, right? Where it says, don't draw attention to his shoes.
Right.
Or other details that might highlight his height.
Right. For group shots, the politician's positioning must be approved in advance. So you can't set him next to, say, Vucic, who's quite tall. Or, you know, so they have to figure out who he stands by. I mean, the EU pictures are usually pretty easy because he can stand by Costa. Because he's pretty short, right? And Ursula von der Leyen, and he won't look quite so small. But this is a problem as he, you know, I guess goes more and more into Eastern Europe. And then this one, shots that could be used for memes or derogatory publications are not permitted. How are you going to prevent that?
Like if he walks past a green screen, like, oh, everybody shut the cameras off. You
know? Right. Yeah.
That could be used as a meme.
How can you...
Oh, my God.
Have you ever heard of AI? We can do whatever we want with Zelensky's image. And we're going to make memes no matter what you say.
You can't have him stand next to our next guest. Our next guest coming up in moments, J.J. Carroll. J.J., I don't know if you know this, is like 7.5 feet tall.
No, he's not.
He really is.
I know that. I've had dinner with him.
He's really, really tall. He's not seven feet tall. And you would never put Zelensky near him because it'd look like a dwarf standing next to him. So we're going to get to J.J. in just
a second. Don't make fun of short people. I'm 5'2".
You know. I'm not making fun of short people. Okay. I married one. I married one. But we also have to keep stools in the kitchen because some of the high shelves.
Yeah. So
you require me to get up there and.
This is true. This happens.
So I'm 6'2".
Yeah, but I also am not sensitive of you taking pictures that show that I'm short. I'm cool with that.
Don't show her shoes. She wears high heels. Oh, my gosh. All right. We're going to get to JJ in a second because Tom Holman just made a big announcement about what's about to happen right now with all of these illegal immigrants across the United States. What does the plan look like to go after all of these illegal gang members who are here, these cartel members that are still inside the United States? Trump shut down the border. But many of them are still here. Millions of them are still here. We're going to talk with JJ about that in a moment. But first, all of these countries right now are buying up as much gold as they can get their hands on. Records. I just got a phone earlier this afternoon. It's stunning, actually, how these central banks are buying up gold. The U.S. dollar is, by the way, folks, in real trouble. And President Trump knows that. And I think this is a lot of this movement right now while this Middle East trip to try to bring back some of this money into the United States. If you're going to make these deals right now, bringing as much money as you can into the United States, U.S. dollar is in trouble and it is going further down. That's why there's big movements right now to get the Trump administration to move us towards a gold standard. Put the United States back on a gold standard. Try to shore up the U.S. dollar that has been pummeled and really been crushed right now. Global currencies are falling. Big money is in a panic over the U.S. dollar. That's why big banks and billionaires are buying gold right now in record amounts. As long as the dollar keeps falling in value, they're going to keep buying that gold. And by the way, Goldman Sachs has now predicted $4,500 for gold per ounce that it will reach in more by the end of next year. $4,500 an ounce for gold. That's unbelievable. And our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up if you want to start investing in gold or other precious metals. Just give them a call. They're an education company first, so there's no pressure at all to buy. And even if you buy something, you have 24 hours. You can say, you know what, I don't feel like buying gold, and they'll take care of you. So there's no pressure at all. Just talk with them. See if it fits. If you've got like a few thousand dollars in a savings account in U.S. dollars, can you convert that to precious metals like silver or gold? Maybe you've got an old 401k laying around or an old IRA that's still invested in the stock market. You can actually roll that into a self-directed IRA, and they can help you do that. They're an incredible company. I would just give them a call. Tell them I sent you. Talk with them. Again, there's no obligation. Just learn about it. 1-800-613-3557 is the place to go. Have a conversation with them. Or go to LearRedacted.com and ask for your free gold guide. They've got a $4,200 gold guide right now with all sorts of great information in there. And actually, the team has actually put together a whole new report on the currency wars that we're currently facing. So ask them for that as well. LearRedacted.com or call 1-800-613-3557 right now. Well, now that President Trump has closed the border, violent illegal criminal cartels are scattered across the United States of America, living down the streets from our families. That's actually the truth. I know it sounds hard to hear that. Oh, that sounds sensational. Well, our next guest is going to tell you that it's not sensational. This is the reality across America, one by one, inch by inch right now. President Trump, Tom Homan are working to arrest and deport each and every one of them. How will they do it? That's the question. Tom Homan just addressed this and said that he's building a massive operation to arrest these criminals. Watch him on that Traitor Jake Tapper show. Watch.
Well, we're going to ramp up the number of teams in the interior of the United States. So we're building that teams now. We're going to increase the teams going out. They're coming from various agencies, right? We got about 14,000 officers within ICE between ERO and HSI. We're going to pull more of them into this event. Plus, we got other federal agencies. You know, President Trump has all the government on this. So we got ATF, DEA, U.S. Marshals. You know, we got all the DOJ law enforcement entities, plus the State Department. So we're bringing law enforcement officials from all the federal agencies in.
So what does all this look like? How is this all going to come together? Someone knows this better than anyone. It's J.J. Carroll. He's the author of the book Treason, the Biden Administration's Strategic and Malicious Destruction of America's Sovereignty. It's a must-read book. Highly recommend that you pick it up. J.J. spent 24 years at the Customs and Border Protection as a supervisor. He knows all about these operations. J.J., welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
Great to see you too. I wish I was a little taller, not 7 feet tall, but maybe I'll take an inch or two to get up to about the 6'4", 6'5" area.
You are tall. You are tall. When I first met you and we had dinner, I was like, holy smokes, man, this guy's tall. He's gonna hit our ceilings when he walks in here. You wouldn't be able to stand next to Zelensky, that's for sure. So
No.
So you know all about this. So when you see what the president has done on closing the border down, lock down the border, but the sad tragedy of all of this, the sad truth of all of this, is that these illegal cartels, we had Ryan Mata on the show yesterday down in Mexico, Tijuana, Mexico, the violence is absolutely catastrophic, bodies everywhere, mass graves. So these gangs are still in the United States, and Tom Homan is having to go around and try to round up these individuals. What does that operation look like, and how dangerous do you think it is right now?
I think it's very dangerous. We have to look at it from a real macro to the old days. This was less than 4 years ago. This was before Joe Biden. The Mexican drug cartels turned over their narcotics. I mean, they smuggled it across the border and they gave it to, you know, the white biker gangs, 18th Street gang, the MS-13 gangs here, and gave them the narcotics, and they would transport them, cut them up in the load houses, and then distribute it. Not anymore. The cartels are here in America because of Joe Biden's lax policies and really no policy, no law enforcement deterrent. The cartels moved their apparatuses, their personnel into America. So when we go, quote, into war with the cartels in Mexico, we have to be ready to go to war with them in America. They're just not going to give away a $1 trillion business. They're going to fight us. And Tom Homan, let's take the 14,000 officers that he's talking about. Let's say they have to create a team of 10 each. That's 1,400 teams to go after millions upon millions of gang members and cartel and terrorists and PLA soldiers that are in our country. He has got to stop or ramp up from 1,000 deportations a day to 10 to 15,000 a day. If we stay at the same number that he's doing, Clayton, it will take us over 100 years to get these people out of our country.
Holy smokes.
My goodness.
I know, to hear the math, because you hear like, oh, we have these victories, like 200 people rounded up. That's great.
Yeah. It's just not the volume. And you talk about in your book how people say, well, we need to let some people in. And you give the example of numbers at the end of the book where you're like, well, what is that number? Well, we went past that number, that absurd number already. We got numbers from the Biden administration of how many people we knew, criminals that we had let out. And it was in the tens of thousands, I think, is what the Biden administration, including, strangely enough, embezzlement. Like, we knew that there were illegal people embezzling. The problem is, we know we've got a full-on mafia right now happening. And so not only do we need the manpower, but we need the detective power as well. And so what do we got? What do we got there?
I don't think we have enough. I don't think Tom Homan is, and I'm hearing this from multiple people, he is not fully funded. He does not have the personnel. Why? Well, you have Speaker Johnson as the speaker. He's brought up five bills to codify Trump. He's not giving this the money, not giving the manpower to Tom Homan to do the job. Where's the military? Why is the military not involved? There's a lot of questions I have for how this is being played out. It's too slow. This is not my words. These are Tom Homan. Tom Homan is frustrated beyond belief. When you listen to his interviews he's given, they're trying to applaud him with 100,000 arrests. And he actually was just like angry. Like, no, 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 that's not enough. Because he knows the numbers as well as I do. I think what is never discussed, Natalie, and it needs to be brought out to the open. We are looking at a time bomb in America. And what is that time bomb? It is a demographic explosion. So you have 50 million illegal aliens in the country, not even disputed. Everyone that's in the business agrees that's the baseline number. 1 in 6 to 1 in 7 residents in America is illegal alien. If we do not remove them, meaning Donald Trump does not get those people out in 2030, our country changes overnight. Why? Because we have the census. And the experts say when the Democrats are able to get every illegal alien counted, we are going to have almost a 60-seat flip to the Democrats when they do appropriation for congressional seats. And then, here's a kicker on everything else, then the electoral votes will also switch as well, meaning the blue states, the liberal sanctuary states and cities will get more electoral votes, they'll get more appropriated congressional seats, and you will flip the House to 60 seats. And as Elon Musk stated this about a month ago, you will never be able to vote yourself out of this. And this is the absolute plan of the Biden administration, and that is to fundamentally transform America through demographics, through open borders, and they allow 30 million people in 4 years. That's treason.
So are you encouraged at all by the first of all, stopping the flow into the United States? We don't have a wall built. I see some people in our chat saying, why aren't we building this big, beautiful wall? I don't know where the money is for that, if that's even coming together yet or not. You talk to your Customs and Border Patrol agents and your friends in the industry. What are they saying? Are they encouraged that they've been able to stop the flow of this, to stop the bleeding so we can go and find these people?
Yes, the border shut down. Donald Trump did it in a day. That showed you the lie. This whole thing's a lie. Donald Trump shut it down. I think we're at 99.5% or something like that of the height of Joe Biden's time. The arrests are not happening. I'm talking to my buddies. They're saying it's dead. It's dead. It's back to the, quote, old days, beyond even the old days, meaning when Trump was leaving office and we were arresting 500 people a day. It's almost non-existent. So now, Donald Trump, I give him an A, not an A-plus on the border, because the border wall is not finished. There's not enough military down there, but he's crushed it. However, that's not the big problem. The big problem is What are you going to do about the flood that's in your country? And let me give you an analogy. It's like when you come home and your basement's flooded because the main broke. Well, what do? You shut the main off. Now you have 8 feet of water in your house. Well, you take your giant suction fans and you blow the water out. What we're doing, instead of bringing fans and suction mechanisms to get the water out, we're using Red Solo cups. And we're dipping it in and dumping it out. That's the analogy of what's happening with the interior arrest. Look, you don't have to like me or my critique. It's a simple math problem. You have 50 million people in America, and you're deporting 1,000 to 1,500 a day. Do the math. It's just a math problem. Yeah. And do you want our nation to remain a nation of our true demographics, or do you want to upset the demographics of America and allow this illegal artificial explosion into our country? Then don't do it. But if you want to save our republic, because this is a national security emergency, if you want to save our republic, then we have to remove the 50 million illegal aliens. And what we're doing now, Clayton and Natalie, is not enough. It's not enough.
What about self-deportations? Because that has... Is it working? I mean, is it a drop in the bucket?
It's a great question.
Are we
$1,000 was like $1,000,
right? Yeah. Christy Noem said, "Look, then you have the hope of coming back. Are we being scary enough, or is these people are too scary in and of themselves, so they wouldn't actually consider this?"
Well, I think it's a great question, because you have to separate, right? You have illegal aliens that are raping and pillaging our social systems. Our education system, our healthcare system. You guys live in Colorado. Denver healthcare system, absolutely obliterated under Joe Biden. So you have that. Then you have the gangsters and the criminal cartels and the PLA soldiers and terrorists. They're not going. You're going to have to extract them out. I write this in my book. But the ones that are, quote, not the criminals, right, the good, hardworking people that are obliterating all of our social welfare, you have to force them to leave, meaning... the carrot and the stick. We'll give you $1,000 because Joe Biden lied to you and you had to pay the smuggling fees. We're going to give you $1,000. You can fly home. And if you don't, then I'm going to ban you from ever coming back ever again. We'll put you in a DHS status base and you can't. That I like that idea. I think all ideas to get it done needs to be happening. But what's missing, guys? What is missing is that mass roundup. And let me give you an example. A lot of your audience thinks that all the hotels are empty and the shelters are empty of illegal aliens. No, there's hotels and shelters across America where we're still paying for these people to live there in New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, on and on and on. What if J.J. Carroll was working with Tom Homan and I had 50 National Guard and 50 ICE agents and Border Patrol agents, and I went to the Roosevelt Hotel or I went to a shelter, and at 2 o'clock in the morning I surrounded it, and then I arrested 5,000 illegal aliens and deported them the same day, which can be done. Do you think that would have an impact on the people that are just hemming and hawing and thinking, wow, I wonder if I should stay? Or they're thinking, oh my God, they're going to come to my shelter tonight and they're going to round us up at 2 o'clock in the morning, put us on flames and fly us out of here. There needs to be a shock and awe, and we have not had a shock and awe moment. And I have to ask the question, why not? Why not?
That's a great question. We're pushing for a $1 trillion defense budget right now.
Yeah.
To me, and I said this the other day on the show, there's no greater threat to the United States of America than what sits right on our southern border. And now what's inside the United States from that southern border, inside, not Iran, not Yemen, right here inside the United States, a $1 trillion defense budget. I mean, I don't want to ask you numbers here, but I mean, what do you were with the Border Patrol. You were out in the middle of the night at 1 a.m, 2 a.m, rounding these guys up, getting in fights. I mean, unbelievable what you had to go through. If anyone reads your book, they'll know what the horrible stuff you had to deal with. What kind of numbers do you think that Holman would need in order to successfully hire the right amount of people to get this done?
Well, this has to be a force multiplier, and we don't have time to go and hire and train. I don't want a bunch of green guys like green beaning their newbies running around the country. So what do? You bring the military in, you bring guys like myself, I can name 100 guys like myself that ran task forces, stations, that know how to lead men, and you get us into every state, you give us the resources, and you deputize the sheriffs and the police, and then you put an incentive on the local police and sheriffs. Hey, for every illegal alien you catch, we'll give your budget $200, whatever it is. We'll pay for your manpower. We'll buy you new cars, whatever it is. It needs a ban, all hands on deck. And where are those hands? They're in current retirees on, across all law enforcement, state, local, and federal, but mainly Border Patrol and HSI as your leaders. And then you have military. You just talked about this. We're going to Iran, Yemen. We're talking about all the Middle East star, all garbage. What about every single day, Clayton and Natalie, I open up my computer and I close my eyes and I go, how many am I going to see today? How many murders, how many rapes, how many child sex trafficking, how many of illegal aliens are destroying Americans every single day? And a former congressman told me the other day, the number of Americans that are murdered and killed every single day in America by illegal aliens has risen to almost 40 a day. You don't think that's a national security emergency? 40 Americans are being murdered and killed, not talking about the rapes and the pedophilia. Every single day I read multiple women raped, multiple children raped, multiple men killed, slaughtered by a drunk driver, on and on and on ad nauseum. How about this? How about just this, Clayton? Why don't we take care of America first? Why isn't that so hard? Why, it's a novel idea. Isn't it amazing how the politicians won't do anything, do nothing to secure the safety of America? Joe Biden and his administration, funded by Speaker Johnson and the House, the Republican House, paid for the destruction of our sovereignty. We are living in chaos right now. And if you think things are going to get easier and better, you're a fool, because it's going to get harder and harder.
Well, I think that's exactly what most of us do think, because we see these X feeds of ICE and we're like, oh, good, they're doing that. I feel a little safer. So what you're saying is it's not time for that yet. We can't feel that.
It's a drop
right
in
now.
The bucket, really. Yeah.
Well, think of this. Okay, let's say 30 million people crossed the border. 12 million were determined by the Border Patrol. 500,000 were from Haiti. Over 1 million from Venezuela. 200,000 from China. Over 200,000 special interest aliens were arrested and released. The vast majority of everyone that crossed, 60 to 70%, were single adult military aged men. So every time you see a narcotic arrest, or every time you see a rapist or a pedophile arrested, an illegal alien murderer arrested, that's a drop in the bucket. We're talking millions. And I did this in my book, Invaded, and I did it in my book, Treason. I lay it out, just a math problem. Look at the statistical, and I'm going off of not my statistics, I'm going off the government, which we all know the government is absolutely honest all the time. By their own admission, they have brought in, under one admission of 7 million people, they identified over 662,000 criminals, 15,000 murderers, and over 16,000 sexual assaults, with 11,000 rapists that we allowed into our country. Convicted rapists and convicted murderers. And that's a drop in the bucket, guys. Just a drop in the bucket.
When you hear it in those terms, the math, it's, I wish that Tom Holman, I wish his team would do a better job, you know, in front of these congressional hearings, being able to put up the math and just lay it out just like you did. Because I don't know that President Trump, I don't know. I don't know if they know that these numbers are as bad as they are and how long it will take, 100 years.
They know they got elected on this. So, yeah, why is he not getting the full military support? I would like to see.
And if I could take 1 minute just to say one other thing. We now just had RFK Jr. give testimony in front of not testimony, but made an announcement in front of Donald Trump during his cabinet meeting. And then today gave a sworn testimony that HHS under Javier Becerra and the Biden administration were the main collaborators in putting children into forced sexual slavery in America. And no one says a word. And where in the hell is the task force to go locate? And RFK Jr. said today, thank God, he's finally said what I've been saying for years. Clayton, you can vouch for this. I said it's not 320,000. How many times did you hear me say that, Clayton? It's not 320,000. It's over a half a million. And RFK Jr. today said exactly what I've said. He goes, it's not 320,000. The Biden administration has sexually mutilated and destroyed children and put them into slavery at least a half a million. And no one says anything. Where's the task force to get these? We just now, Tom Homan and DHS said, well, they found 5,000 of these children. Wait a minute. Where's the pictures? I want to see the pictures because I don't believe anybody. Where and come back. If it's 5,000, great. I applaud you for that. You're still missing at least 495,000 of them. Where the hell are the children? Is that not a priority? How can that not be a priority, guys? How can it not?
Yeah. No, because you have all these activists who are in Congress and the blue-haired ladies who want to just pressure RFK Jr. about Fruit Loops and are upset that they're going to take away her Fruit Loops. Like, that's more concerning. That's more concerning to these members of Congress. Or, you know, you have like Representative Dingell just asleep in the middle of a congressional hearing yesterday. Like, yeah, they don't care. They don't care. Because it's all orchestrated. So, it requires you and me and it requires us and, you know, those watching right now to demand that we go and find these children and that we stand up and give Tom Homan the resources that he needs. Because when he's out there at these ICE detention centers, now you have these liberal activists who are standing in front trying to block them. I mean, imagine that. You've seen the videos. Like, at these detention centers, at ICE detention centers, there's liberal activists with blue hair out there saying how horrible it is and you're all xenophobes and you're bad. So,
but you
JJ,
know why?
You're a bad person.
Yeah, but you know why that's allowed, that why that keeps growing? Because when you had Congresswoman, that obese woman, punching an ICE officer in the back and his head, why was she not arrested? The reason why we're seeing this lawlessness is because we have this inability as the Department of Justice, this complete cowardice to arrest people when they commit crimes. When you don't arrest people that commit crimes, the other criminals go, well, hell, I'll do that too. So we went from four or five of the stupid Democrats protesting and one being arrested, and then the other ones see the other three savages don't get arrested. Well, hell, I'll go down there. Now I got 50 people. Now I got 100. Now I got 1,000. All because, for whatever reason, and I don't know why, law enforcement has become impotent. We have been so brutalized from the Ferguson effect to Black Lives Matter and George Floyd that no one wants to do the job. What happened with those Congress people punching law enforcement? Dear God, if I was in charge and I was the watch commander or the deputy patrol agent in charge of that station, I would have been standing there going, arrest that person, arrest that person. Where was the leadership? Where was the damn leadership in law enforcement? It's gone. It's shocking. I talk to all of my friends that are in law enforcement, all my friends that are retired. We're dismayed and we're frustrated and we're embarrassed at the way law enforcement handles themselves today. And I'm telling you, all the audience watching, I know you have an amazing, huge audience. You need to be prepared. There's no one coming to help you. And the ones that come that are going to come help you are so few and far between. They're not guys like me. They're not. They're guys that are scared to death to do their job. And you can watch video after video after video of police ceding ground instead of moving forward and taking care of business. We live in a lawless society. I hate to say that out loud, but it is. It's you can't look at what's happening in America and say everything's okay, because it's not, Clayton.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 months of President Trump is not going to change all of this overnight.
No.
And especially when you have these factions inside the government, inside the Republican Party, people like Greg Abbott, who are still allowing these massive facilities inside of Texas that have all of these illegal children that are just being held there. We know where a lot of these children are in Texas. And what is Greg Abbott doing about it? Nothing.
Nothing.
So you have these factions that are standing up and fighting for it. And then you have those who are getting in the way of it. JJ Carroll, great to see you as always. I should mention the book. Once again, people need to go read this book. You want to understand how this was all facilitated by the Biden administration, called Treason, the Biden administration's strategic and malicious destruction of America's sovereignty. Check it out. JJ, great to see you as always. I hope Tom Homan and his team are paying attention to this. Thanks, JJ.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Yes, we will. All right. Well, that's almost going to do it for us at Redacted. But before we go, we want to remind you that Redacted is brought to you by Tax Network USA, because if you are struggling in this tough economy, we did see inflation go down, but it's still up. It's down by less, but still a positive number. You know this. Your expenses have not got easier. So if you're living on your credit cards and you're wondering, how am I going to pay the tax bill that just came in mail because half of my money is going to the government? Well, you can have Tax Network USA actually negotiate on your behalf, because now that tax day has passed, you may see this liability and you don't know what to do. Don't just leave it. Nothing in life is solved that way. Get some experts on your side to be your advocate. There are over 5,000 new tax liens filed every day, and tools like property seizure, bank levies, wage garnishes. The IRS is applying pressure at levels we've never seen before, and they are not friendly. They don't have to be, but you can be friendly. You can get someone who is friendly on your side. If you're a self-employed or a business owner, even if your books are a mess, they've got you covered. So call them for a free consultation. They can look at your situation and see what they can do for you. That's 800-958-1000, or go to tnusa.com/redacted. Again, that's 800-958-1000 or tnusa.com/redacted. As our one of our favorite authors, Tom Wheelwright, likes to say, you need to have someone who understands the IRS and is on your side, treats them well, understands how to win. You should always be looking out to have the best advocates in your life. So visit them, tnusa.com/redacted.
Hey, we have a store, and I'd love for you guys to go support the store if you'd like. Just go to redactedstore.com. Check out their wares that we have set up over there. We've got some great hoodies, mugs, T-shirts, as well as some stickers, all of it to support independent journalism. Grab a Redacted hoodie, logo, shirt, one of our mugs, our America First mugs. All of it you can find there. Just go to redactedstore.com. You know, Father's Day is coming up. Great gift for the dad who watches this show out there. Join the rebellion and support independent journalism. We really do not mark the prices up beyond what very much at all beyond what the printing costs are. So we really try to keep the prices just at cost as best we can. So check them out over at redactedstore.com.
All right. That's going to do it for us this week. That's the end of our live shows for the week, but we'll have content for you all throughout the weekend. So stay tuned to Redacted. Make sure you're subscribed so you can hit subscribe, but then also hover over it, pull down and hit the notification bell so that you are sure not to miss any episodes of Redacted on whatever platform that you like to watch us on. Thanks for being here, you guys. We will be here next week with you.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.